behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews.
Let me set the scene for you. I'm in the Rocks in Sydney, sitting here in a building built in 1841 with all this sandstone around us. It's sensational. The oldest licensed hotel in Sydney, and since 86 it's been a brewery. Glenn Hayden, mate, how good is this?
Well, it's a lovely spot. Thank you. And not a bad day in Sydney for the middle of winter.
Much better than Hobart.
1841, a lot of history in these walls.
Yeah, isn't
a lot
it?
Of history.
If and, only they could talk.
All the sandstone came from just across the road, all obviously hand-cut by convicts of the day.
Yep. Oh, it's beautiful. As I was saying to you before, I spent my anniversary in this street, up the street at the Langham a few years ago. And we spent a few afternoons here, my wife and I, just enjoying this place. And what I loved about it was the fact that there's such a cross-section of people here. You know, you've got tourists and locals, people from all walks of life. It's just such a welcoming feel.
Yeah, the community's changed quite a lot since 1986 when we purchased the hotel. There was the area was actually handled by looked after by the Housing Commission. So there's a lot of ex-waterfront workers that had housing in this particular area.
Yep.
And as you know, it's significantly historical nature in this area. And over the past 4 or 5 years, these houses have been sold off, so the area has changed again.
Yep.
Because of the nature of the way it was when we first arrived, it meant that we were out of the way. It wasn't a place that people walked past.
Yep.
So we had to draw clientele.
Yep.
And so it was people that were interested in food and beverage, which is what we placed our business on. I don't believe in gaming machines. I'm not against gambling, but I don't like gaming machines.
I am with you.
And I believe pubs are a place where people should converse.
Yeah, it's like an extension of your lounge room, isn't it, really?
Precisely what we wanted, and that's what I wanted to do as a publican, make it feel like you're entertaining people in your home.
Yeah.
And so people came and conversed.
Yep.
We have television.
Yep.
We don't have any sound on.
No.
You can watch the All Blacks play because I'm a Kiwi.
Yep.
You can watch Australian rugby when there's test series going on, but never with the sound on unless it's perhaps a World Cup final or something like that. But the point of the issue is you can keep in touch with the sport, but you must be here to converse with your mates and enjoy the ambience of...
And obviously other people love it too because you can see the little brass plaques above all the seats of clientele present and past and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the brass plaques was something I started as just to honour people that were patrons of the hotel. If you ever ask for one, you'll never get one. So it's something, that's how the rule went. People have asked and haven't been allowed to put them up and I've walked away sheepishly at times and upset at others, but that's the nature of how it works here.
Fair enough. Yep. But let's go back. So 30 years ago, and you took a real punt starting a brewery in this area. Were you fucking mad?
Yeah, well, look, it was interesting. I was a trader in the old days, and a mate of mine, Duncan McGillivray, who had Two Dogs Alcoholic Lemonade.
Yes, I remember that.
After that event, said, look, we should get into brewing. I said, no, I'm happy with the meat business and carried on. But he eventually wore me down. And we bought the equipment in the UK and bought enough out for him to open the Port Dock in Adelaide.
Yep.
And we opened the Lord, and we opened... around the same time, but we are now the oldest continually trading craft brewery in Australia.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys are concentrating on these things called British Real Ales as a bit of a base, which was pretty much the forerunner to this thing we call craft beer. Did you have any idea at the time what this could actually become?
Look, we always had an inkling, and I personally had an inkling, that people were a bit sick of being told what they could drink.
Yep.
And that's what made me really want to brew beer and an ale in our case, because it was a point of difference. Yep. But also the building, I mean, the brewery we bought was a British ale brewery.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure, we could make lagers by putting more modern tanks in and changing the way we did things. But to me, I wanted to make ales, and I could make lighter ales, which are the equivalent of lagers in colour and perception anyway. Yep. But it suited me, the brewery, and also it suited the nature of the home of our brewery, which is, you know, a very old historical building, which is a colonial Georgian type architecture.
And the 80s in the brewery industry would have been a pretty fun time to own a brewery, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they were fun times and they were interesting times. People would walk in the door and ask for a VB and we'd say, well, I'm sorry, we don't have a VB. And they'd either look really perplexed and perhaps ask for further explanation. But I can tell you that in those days, the majority of them would walk out the door. It was quite interesting.
Really?
They didn't even want to look at an alternative because they couldn't face the idea of perhaps not drinking something that they were so used to and been driven down their throats for many, many years. So, yeah, a big time of change was taking place.
What do you miss about those early days?
Not a lot, really. They were pioneering days. You know, we worked trying to reduce excise in Canberra. I did that with Chuck Hahn, as a matter of fact. Yep. We went down there many times.
Yep.
We didn't have any success, really, although it wasn't through lack of effort, and we really tried to put in evidence that proved that brewing beer was no different to winemaking in that respect, and perhaps we should be looked at a bit differently. The larger breweries put pressure on us too, in that manner, but to be quite honest, I don't think they understood the revolution that we were starting to make beer fashionable, also really interesting in the manner that it used to be. And I think that probably that's a bit to do with the wine industry as well. You know, we perceive to brew with a bit more interesting ingredients and more choice, and therefore offer people different things.
Yeah, you mentioned those big breweries, like back around the same time that you guys started. A bloke called Phil Sexton was doing something over in WA called Matilda Bay. Did you guys ever put your heads together and talk about, you know, maybe with Chuck as well, and talk about how we can take on these big breweries?
It wasn't really for me at that stage. I think probably that they did. And, you know, I know Phil and obviously those people, and Power Brewing was happening at the time too. And I think those guys were actually out there to try and compete in the lager market. But, you know, we were still, they didn't really understand, those guys didn't really understand what we were doing. So we were more artisan. As I said, we were almost more wine makers. I used to describe beer in terms of floral hop aromas and herbaceousness, and people would think I was bloody gay or a little bit odd. But the point is, that was the passion I had for flavour profile, and why my passion with food and beverage aligns together.
Yep.
Why our hotel has won the Gourmet Traveller Best Pub Wonders of the Year.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, runner up again this year.
Yep.
And it's about those matches and the conviviality of those things all together. That's what I'm about, and that's what I'm about in brewing beer. And because of ales, we brew traditional style of ales, but we've experimented, and as we do now with our canning beer in cans now, it gives us the opportunity to just play with some other things and as we say, give the old lord a new coat.
Yeah, nice. And look, so even some of those original beers from the first couple of years are still being pouring today. I was just downstairs and noticed the quail ale place holder up there. That's a pretty cool story about how that one came about, isn't it?
Yeah, a very cool story. Dan Quayle, the ex-Vice President of the United States, visited here, and it was called that beer. We used to have a bit of a wheat component in it in those days, and it was called Fleet Wheat, because everything obviously here is nautical themed, so that's how the naming, you know, becomes sort of reasonably easy and also a bit humorous at times. That's how it was Fleet Wheat, but it was very easy to put a chalk through the board and just make it Quayle Ale from that moment on.
Executive decision.
Executive decision on the spot. And quail, very popular in the summer, still really one of our most popular beers, and the wheat component's gone now because I never liked those sort of banana-y, yeasty characters that come out of that particular yeast that we were using at the time. So we've made a much cleaner beer. It's lower in alcohol and, as I said, extremely popular. Yep. Real throwdown stuff in the summer.
Yeah.
Too easy to drink.
The way you're speaking about these beers, it's like you've had a hand in making a lot of them. Is that sort of how you've operated?
Yeah, very much so. We all talk very closely. It's like the menu at the Lord. I mean, I'm involved with writing the menu in the restaurant here and all the food, because that's my love and passion. And we talk about flavour profile and beers all the time. Peking Poppy was my sort of craziest one that
I brought out,
named after one of my twins, my daughter Poppy with an I, not a Y. And we always like yum cha and Asian style food. So I come up with a bit of star anise and fennel idea to try and give it a bit of a lift. Particularly like the beer myself. I think it goes really well with Asian food, to be quite honest. But then our beers do a bit. Three Sheets with that floral is a really good with spicy food, and it goes with everything. It's a session ale, but it goes really well with spicy food. And, you know, the thing is, it is so sessionable that you can eat it with roast dinners and seafood.
You're a man after my own heart. The idea of having a session ale not being too high on the ABV is something I really love, you know. And in this warmer weather that you get up here and compared to Hobart, I think you might need a bit of that, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think, and I really think that beer is a bit about sessionability. And, you know, sessionability, we all talk about now sessionability, drinkability.
Yeah.
I've always said that if you don't feel like two beers, you're not drinking mine because that's the way we make our beer. You know, one's never enough.
But don't you think that sessionability sort of comes hand in hand with the conversation that we're talking about before?
Precisely. Precisely, because the first one's usually disappeared before you've had the welcomes.
Yeah.
You know, you buy a beer for your mate, his wife, your friend, whatever, boom, your beer's gone while you're talking about it. So they're the same. You know, you need that drinkability, in my belief, to make those things worthwhile. The craft brewery industry has changed all for the better here, of course. You know, and I like that they are putting out these expensive IBUs because it's not the sort of beer I make. So, I don't particularly like that either, only because I find that that high bitterness tends to take away the flavor profile of both hop and malt aroma. And I like to sort of taste a little bit of all those things. So I guess I'm all a little bit softer in that approach. I make wine the same way. You know, I want it very, very approachable. I don't want overripe fruit. So I don't want that happening in beer either.
Do you have a favourite of your beers?
Yeah, Three Sheets. Three Sheets was the one we got. And it was a new hop from New Zealand that was really herbaceous. Yep. And it's exactly what I was wanting. I was wanting something floral on the nose that showed that you weren't just drinking. You had something else to go with, not just a palate, but you had the olfactory system dancing because of all the excitement that was going on with the beer. So not only did it look good, and we always pour beer with a head, we liked it like that. We liked the carbonation profile of that beer. Therefore, I like the aroma that gives off, and we like the colour. So that's why Three Sheets has always been a favourite of mine.
Yep.
And we're exporting, you know, that beer very successfully now, and that's exciting for us as well.
Cans have helped with that?
And cans will help. But the funny thing is that, you know, when we launched packaged product, to me, it was all about on-premise. So it was about the restaurant trade. And it was the sommeliers of Sydney that got behind us and supported us.
Oh, really?
In terms of how Three Sheets went in a bottle. And so we're in the leading restaurants in Sydney, is Rockpool and Key and those sorts of places, along with many other really interesting and supportive customers. People like Golden Century have had our beer in bottles since inception and remain to do so. And we're very proud of the association with those people. But it was because the sommeliers got behind it and said, well, there's more to beer than Crown Lager, supposedly being the best restaurant beer in Australia. Yeah. And we maintain that bottled product for that reason, because whilst we like cans as well, I think that bottles present a lot better in on a restaurant table situation.
Yes, absolutely.
But however, I'm not again either way. I also like beer. I think beer tastes great out of a bottle. But if it was a hot summer's day and we had an esky outside,
cans on the beach,
I'll be quite happy with a can. You know?
Absolutely.
We all like cans.
Yeah, absolutely. He's giving me a wink here. So you said you wouldn't really want to go back to the 80s, but what about the 90s for you guys? Like, that was a decade you had Carlton Cold, Hahn Ice, all those other cold filtered beers were in there, if I remember correctly. And then you had that whole thing with the premixed, you know, alcopop sort of thing, which Stollies got popular then. I think Sub Zeros were popular then. At that time, was the idea of selling an old English ale a bit of a tough sell?
Yeah, it was difficult. But it was difficult because people weren't really getting what craft ale or craft beers were about.
Yep.
And so it's been a very long lesson in teaching people through beer dinners and beer nights just what we were trying to achieve. And what we were trying to achieve more than anything was a choice. And that is a freedom of choice, that you could drink that style if you wanted to. I'm not again drinking lager. You know, it's not a beer I refuse, to be quite honest. Yeah. There's a lot I prefer,
sure,
but I don't refuse other beers.
It'd be rude.
It would be terrible indictment in life. Yeah, they were interesting days, because the liquor industry suddenly realised they needed change.
Yeah.
And those changes took place. Now, like things like Two Dogs Alcoholic Lemonade that Duncan brewed were really great leaders in that whole alco-pop market.
Yeah.
And that still sells, you know, tremendously well in Japan today. So whilst the 80s were interesting and pioneering, they were quieter days for us. In the 90s, we started to get some traction. And, you know, the restaurant was open and doing very strongly. That made a big difference. It meant we could sell our beer across the table here. So the 90s, better, not necessarily, but certainly different and exciting in the evolution.
Yeah, and a bit more tourism operations sort of in and around here a bit, or?
Yes, and also that tourism thing changed. But, you know, that didn't really, I mean, the tourism was always here. We've always been a business that relied on tourism and visitors because we draw people in here. It's not relying on locals 100% in our business. Also, the structure of the neighbourhood changed too with the opening and development of more offices around the area.
Yep.
And Walsh Bay, which brought more residents in late 90s, 2000s. But it was the offices like multiplex building and behind brought more people in. Penfolds used to be down the road as well. So we had a bit of that custom going. There was more people working in the area after we opened, that 10 years after we opened, which helped us tremendously in lunchtime trade, obviously.
Oh, of course,
and then cocktail hour.
Yeah, and then by the time the Lord was celebrating its 20th birthday, you know, the craft beer thing was really starting to gather some momentum. You had Little Creatures was running, Chuck Hahn had James Squire up and running, obviously Matilda Bay, Coopers. There really was some momentum. Did you guys feel that here at the Lord as well?
Yeah, we certainly saw things were happening and changing, and that was a positive from our point of view.
Awesome, yeah.
But, it wasn't until even later than that that we started to get the smaller individuals, and that's what made the difference. And when you get really good brewers like Ben Spoke and, the early days of Pirate Life, those guys were, all innovative in their ways of doing things. We've always been Coopers fans. I was friends of the Coopers family, and I still have Coopers on tap, the only beer I've ever had on tap outside of ours.
Oh, really? Okay,
And I do that just through an association that
relationships
Coopers.
Make relationships. The world go around.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
And we didn't really feel a clash. So we believe in natural ales and that craft and the craft brewery industry in general. Anyway, it's been a really delicious ride this last 6 or 7 years, and good to see the upcoming new brewers expressing their ways of doing things.
It's pretty exciting times. You guys obviously were one of the early trailblazers of the industry. You know, you talked about the explosion of all these new breweries jumping into the market. So this is now your fourth decade as a brewery. Do you feel like you have to work really hard to remain relevant in what is becoming a very saturated market?
Yeah, it's a change situation, and yes, you're right. It's very, very important to me that our representation on the road, out of the hotel, is extremely strong and consistent, and that's how we are. We are particularly strong and consistent, and we're very strong and consistent on pricing and not discounting. We don't discount to anybody, so no one gets a discount. That's our price. If you can't afford that or don't want that, we apologize. We're not overpriced in the marketplace.
Yep.
We are bespoke. We are, it's expensive to make the sorts of products we make. We use the best malt we can buy and obviously the best hops that are available at the time. So all those things are costly, but we are honest in the way we trade, and we've always been honest and not discounting. We don't wish to partake in that market ever, and we continue on. We had rapid growth, and we see that growth leveling off a little bit now, but that's due to competition, and there's a lot of breweries out there.
Yeah.
But we maintain our status and continue to do so. So to me, the expense of our business outside of these walls is to continue to pursue export deals where we can have some success and also not place all the eggs in one basket, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a great home base here, but you mentioned export. Whereabouts are you exporting to these days?
We're exporting in Asia. We've exported into Europe before and the US. The US is a bit of a difficult market because we just aren't quite cost competitive in their marketplace. However, there is still a need, and we're looking down that avenue again at the moment. We feel it's about the brand, and we've got to keep building the brand, and the Lord is an institution. As a journalist once said, if the Lord Nelson is an institution, lock me in and throw away the key. That was a lovely comment that we still quote today about someone who really enjoyed the beers that we make.
Yeah, nice, nice. Now, one of the things I always like to ask about ask brewery owners is about the idea of instilling the love of brewing in their children. I think that was your son that I saw downstairs this morning.
Yes.
And you had another son, because I was thinking, who would you hand over to? You've got an older son. He's pissed off to Canada. What the hell happened?
Yeah, well, Tristan and his love of life has moved to Canada, and they're in a partnership that has Britannia Brewing Company.
Yep.
And a bar there, very similar to what, I've done.
Yeah. Whose beers are better?
Well, he makes very good beer. I think that I think the Canadians are probably the most innovative of anyone
in
the world.
It's a good scene for one here.
Very good craft beer. And a mixture of stuff. Not all high IBUs either. You get a good flavour profile. The sour beers are interesting. I don't particularly like sour beers, by the way, but I don't see anything wrong with that. It's all about people.
It's an acquired taste.
But, you know, there's some great breweries there making really good beer. And it's a different sort of beer culture. I mean, the Canadian culture is grown around beer rather than wine because they didn't have a wine business.
Okay.
Because of obviously the climate there doesn't suit itself to a wine industry, although the Okanagan does have a wine industry, and I hope to see that next week when I fly to Canada.
Fantastic.
But it's just a different sort of scene, so therefore everyone drinks beer, male and female all drink beer regardless.
Yes, sir.
And they go to the smaller breweries, which all have bars, and fill up their takeaways and have a beer whilst they're there and head home. So that's often the ladies' or the wives' duty, isn't it? Much as the man's at work, he can't always be there through the day. And when they need their growler filled, she's the one that does the duty and takes the kids with her and good on them.
Does Tristan ever ring up Dad and ask for a bit of advice about?
Well, I think that he's probably had one of the better profiles of anyone I ever knew. I don't know where he got that from, but he brewed here with us and has a great understanding of that. We discuss it when we talk often about profiles of what's going on in different styles. And I think that, as I said, Canada's very innovative in that way. And well ahead of probably where Australia was as a craft brewing nation. No, we concur mostly with most things and, you know, always enjoy, and I'm looking forward to trying some of his beers next week.
Nice, sounds great. So, I mean, you've been in this game for 30, 40 years sort of thing. You know, we're not getting any younger, us older blokes. How do you keep your energy up, and do you still love being part of this game?
Yes, I do. I do enjoy it very much. I get a lot of buzz out of seeing people enjoy our beer. When we first packaged our beer, I remember seeing my first bottle lying in the gutter. And I rolled it over just so that the label could be read a bit more easily. took a photograph of it and walked on. And then
Chuck Hunt says something similar.
Yeah,
actually.
I rung Glenn Cooper and said, "Mate, I've matched you. I've found my first stubby in the gutter." It was a very good feeling, and I still today, if I see one lying around, I always probably adjust it so it can be seen rather than put it where it should really be put.
That is fantastic. So what's the next 10 years for the Lord going to hold?
Look, we're excited about where we're going. We're excited about the innovation of new products and the availability to create them. I think smaller runs. I'd like to see a bit more love of the mainstream beers one makes, rather than the clientele base continually wanting something different.
Absolutely with you,
because it's very difficult in a small brewery to continually change your lines and change your packaging, which is the most expensive thing. Packaging. Wrap cans have made that easier. You know, you can do smaller runs in a wrap, so that's a positive thing for the industry. I think so. Yeah. I think that's positive in that regard. You can run that out much more economically. I hope that the millennial population starts to love more about craft beer as much as we do, rather than being probably alternate drinkers in style. I think that they will, because I think they believe in what we believe in.
Yep.
I know they believe in sustainability, origin.
Absolutely.
And something that we believe in. We've been talking about natural beer for over 35 years, and people didn't even know what we were talking about, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
We're 100% natural, no additives, and people, whilst we were saying it, didn't comprehend as we do today about these sorts of things, which are natural, sustainability, about where the product comes from, organic, biodynamic, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whilst I don't personally believe necessarily all in organic or biodynamic, I believe in as natural as possible. Yeah. I mean, I only eat grass-fed beef, grass-fed, best-fed.
Yep.
And you'd know that from Tassie.
Absolutely.
Grass-fed beef, best-fed beef. I was born in New Zealand, grass-fed beef, best-fed.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. So
more flavour.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were 35 years younger and we're starting this all over again today in the current climate, would you do it?
Probably not do it now today. I think not in Australia. I think the competition's too great here.
Yes.
And I don't think the population is large enough. If we had a large population, you know, and maybe I married a Russian bride, I could probably do it in Russia. You know?
Yeah.
And that'd be a good place to go. There's plenty of people there that like to drink beer.
Man, I'm Ukrainian. That's close enough.
Well, yeah. Ukrainian would be good. That's right. And in fact, it's happening in Russia now too. The smaller people are wanting to drink independent beers. that's a very positive thought. I just think realistically we probably have about as many breweries as we need in this country, and a lot are going to hurt and go broke for it, because I think probably lack of understanding and of the financing of this industry and just the running of the product. It's not easy to be storing and be that far ahead of life. Maybe India's ago, you know, mm-hmm. those sorts of places. I think we need to go with the population, really is. And China's interesting too, but I think slower and a different kind of economy to what's happening here. But we shall see.
So if you had any advice for the young whippersnappers starting this stuff today, what would the old fella tell them?
Brew with caution, brew with belief. Don't overcapitalise.
Yep.
And make sure that people pay their debts.
Oh, nice. Cash flow is important, isn't it?
Cash is king.
Yep.
And you must keep your costs down. It's very simple stuff. You've got to control costs and debt and make sure that you have your cash flow under control.
And, mate, what is the best beer experience you've ever had in your life?
Best beer experience? Well, you know, I could be one-eyed about talking about Lord Nelson experiences, but I think the best beer experience is not just one but many, drinking beers with the people that have the similar love of life that you do, and the conviviality of being able to share stories whilst imbibing in some of those wonderful products has been my pleasure of being involved with beer.
How good is beer?
It is. It's not that, I mean, yes, it's nice to drink on your own, but by Jeep, it's much better when you watch the Eastie Beasties beat Eastwood on Saturday drinking three sheets at the rugby club. You know, that's
nice.
The great stuff.
Nice.
So doing that kind of thing, that's what I think. It's the conviviality of the company that you're in that makes it worthwhile.
It's nice, mate. It's nice. And to wrap it all up, what's the most important lesson you've learned in this game?
Always have a smile on your face. Always walk in with a smile.
Yep.
Always be appreciative of who you are. Always thank everyone around you, including the minnows of the delivery industry,
yep.
The grain guy that delivers and humps bags on his shoulders to our cellar door because we can't nor have the room for a forklift operation here. Always be friendly to your plumber. He's the most important man in the world. And always share those stories and have time for people. And always be convivial and remember the customers. It's as easy as that.
Yeah, I like the fact you said you have time for people, because I rang the office here, I think it was last Thursday, and today's Monday, and you found time in your diary to fit me in. So I'm very appreciative of that, mate, and it just shows to me what a great bloke you are and how much you've given back to this industry. You won the award a few years back, and, mate, it's just fantastic, and I can see why people think very highly of you. So thanks again for your time today.
It's a great pleasure, and thank you for coming up to see us.
Cheers, mate.
You're welcome anytime here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?